We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 9. Markandeya Rishi sees the illusory potency. Verses 1 to 34. We'll read verse 1. Suta uvacha sangstuta bhagavan ittam markandeya natimata narayana narasaka prithaha prikrutaham. Translation. Suta Goswami said, Supreme Lord Narayana, friend of Nara, was satisfied by the proper glorification offered by the intelligent sage Markandeya. Thus the Lord addressed that excellent descendant of Bhrigu. Mukam karati vachalam bangam langate grim yakipam tamam mande shi gurum janatanam. Om Gyana Tiveranasya Gyananjana Shirakaya Chakshunilitam Yena Tasmai Shibaya. So what do you remember from chapter 6, which I believe was it the disappearance of Parikshit, chapter 6? Okay, so what do you remember from chapter 6? He got permission to leave. Wonderful. We should also get such permission, huh? Yes.
Parikshit Maharaj passed the last test of Shukadeva Goswami, who spoke as if speaking about the impersonal Brahma. And Parikshit Maharaj, in his reply, showed that he understands that he speaks about the absolute.
Yes.
Truth, and he was absorbing his mind in the activities of Bhagavan.
Good. Yeah, chapter 5 was, you are not this body again. Okay, yes?
He told, now my life become successful because such a great soul like you showing me such a kindness. And after seeing him completely ready, Shukadeva Goswami left place as he came the same way.
Just left.
Without waiting.
Not waiting, yeah, to see.
Because he saw he was completely ready.
Right. Good. Okay, anything else, Parvati?
This whole arrangement of speaking to Srimad Bhagavatam wasn't actually just for Parikshit Maharaj, it was for us.
Of course.
So that we could develop detachment and fear, fearlessness.
Fearlessness
from death,
Yeah. Good. Abai? No. Anybody else? Okay, we'll move to chapter 7. What was chapter 7 about? Was it about Puranas or? Yeah, okay. Yes?
Here were the 10 topics.
10 topics was there? Okay, good.
Slight differences from the
slight difference.
Second canto.
Okay. Yes?
Major and minor Puranas.
Major and minor Puranas.
The major Puranas have all the 10 topics.
Major ones have all 10 topics.
The lesser two Puranas, five.
Five or more. Okay, anybody else on the chapter 7? Yes?
Please ask for the sign.
Okay, they wanted to hear the history, yes?
For some reason, listening to that chapter develops spiritual strength.
Spiritual strength if you hear chapter 7. Okay, if you're feeling weak, just hear chapter 7. And we are always feeling weak, aren't we? Okay, chapter 8. And now we're getting closer. Markandeya Rishi, is it? Prayers to Naranarayana Rishi. What do you remember from chapter 8? Yes.
The Sutta, he's going to finish the narration about Srimad Bhagavatam, but they wanted to hear about Markandeya Rishi, so they just asked him, so please, they tell to us about this most famous Rishi in the world. And then Sutta was very pleased by this question. He said, it's very nice your question, because we will talk about Naranarayana Rishi, which can clean all contamination in the tragedy.
Good.
Ask the question.
Okay, yes?
Yeah,
Kanyarishi was totally absorbed in his meditation practice of his meditation, but he did not notice 6 manmandalas passed.
He didn't notice 6 manus had passed in his dirt. He was so absorbed. That's good meditation. I mean, we get distracted in 5 minutes. Yeah.
Also, neither Cupid nor Apsaras could agitate.
No, Cupid nor Apsaras could agitate Markandeya? Or, okay. Oh, Narayana Rishi has the same story that we heard. Yeah, Markandeya, okay. Yes?
This first prayer, it was so wonderful because he said, you are indescribable. How can I describe you? Because everything emanates from you. But there is one very nice thing because you have very intimate faith to those who worship you.
Become intimate friend to those who worship you. Okay. Yes?
The sage has noticed that Sudha Goswami was going to finish the narration of Bhagavatam.
Mm-hmm.
So they quickly asked him to speak about the unusual activities of Markandeya
Rishi. Yes, we're going to hear about them.
Puranas.
And the Puranas. We're going to hear about those unusual activities today. So unusual. Okay? Yashuka.
At the end of this chapter, we can learn what we will achieve when we attain pure goodness.
Pure goodness.
In pure goodness, we attain fearlessness, we become spiritually happy, and we go back to God.
Wow. Pure goodness, you attain fearlessness, you become happy spiritually, and you go back to Godhead. Mm. Sounds like Namabhas, almost. Namabhas, fearlessness, and then you go back to Godhead. Okay, so I'm going to tell a few stories about Markandeya Rishi before we start, and we'll have a few stories after also about Markandeya Rishi. So this one is from Antya Lila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, 20th chapter, verse 57. And it's from three Puranas. Well, three Puranas tell the story. Aditya Purana, Markandeya Purana, and Padma Purana tell about a Brahmana who was suffering from leprosy but had a very chaste and faithful wife. He desired to enjoy the company of a prostitute, and therefore his wife went to her and became her maidservant just to draw her attention for his service. When the prostitute agreed to associate with him, the wife brought her the leprotic husband. When that leper, the sinful son of a Brahmin, saw the chastity of his wife, he finally abandoned his sinful intentions. While coming home, however, he touched the body of Markandeya Rishi, who thus cursed him to die at sunrise. So Markandeya is in that story. Because of her chastity, the woman was very powerful. Therefore, when she heard about the curse, she vowed to stop the sunrise. And she did. Because of her strong determination to serve her husband, the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, were very happy and gave her the benediction her husband would be cured and brought back to life. This example is given to emphasize a devotee should engage himself exclusively for the satisfaction of Krishna without personal motives, and that will make his life successful. So if we're chaste to Krishna, like that wife was to her husband, then we will get the result. That all the Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara will be pleased, and they'll give their blessings for us to go back to Godhead and serve Krishna. So the next story is from Mahabharata. In which part? The first part of Mahabharata. And this was, the Pandavas are in the forest at Dvaitavan, and Markandeya Rishi is visiting them. And it is said he had lived since the dawn of creation and knew of everything that had occurred in the history of the universe. I wonder how he knew, since he was in meditation. He was like in meditation the whole time. He wasn't really witnessing it. But anyway, he knew. I guess you didn't have to see to know. He greeted the Pandavas with affection and accepted their worship. And guess how old he looks like? Does anybody know how old? Of course, he's billions.
Like 16
16, exactly, just like Shukadev.
All the pendants we got. Yeah.
The Rishi, whose body was effulgent with spiritual light, who appeared to be a youth of 16, smiled to see them, 16 years old. They reminded him of Ram and Lakshman, who had been exiled to the forest hundreds of thousands of years previously. The sage had also visited them. Since arriving in the forest, Yudhisthira had felt grief at what he had caused, beginning to engulf him. Seeing Markandeya smiling, he asked, "Oh, illustrious one, all these ascetics here are sorry to see our plight. How is it you alone smile with delight?" Markandeya said, "I'm not delighted, my child. Rather, I'm amazed how much your situation resembles the life of Dasharatha's son, Ram. He too suffered due to his unfailing truthfulness. He too lived in the forest, exiled for some years. I remember seeing him thousands of years ago, wandering Mount Rishyamukha with his bow. Like you, Ram was innocent and high-souled, and like you, he lived in the forest out of obedience to his father. This is why I'm smiling. No matter how powerful each of us may be, we cannot avoid the calamities that arrive through destiny. No one, therefore, should ever act unrighteously, thinking I am powerful." Markandeya then assured Yudhisthira that like Ram, he too would regain his kingdom from the Kauravas when his period of exile was over. After promising to come again while they were in the forest, he headed to the north. So he was wandering around, seeing the Pandavas. He saw Ram and Lakshman. And he most probably saw Lord Krishna during Krishna's appearance, because there were a lot of sages at Yudhisthira's sacrifices, and he could have been one of them. So now the Lord, Narayana Rishi, has heard the prayers. Narayana is going to reply to the prayers of Markandeya. And Markandeya is going to ask a very strange benediction that none of us should imitate and ask.
Are we in chapter 9 or chapter 10?
We are in chapter 9. Okay. Yeah. The first verse, Narayana is going to speak. He's going to ask something from him. Now, verse 2. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Markandeya, you are indeed the best of all learned brahmanas. You have perfected your life by practicing fixed meditation upon the Supreme Soul, as well as by focusing upon me, your undeviating devotional service, your austerities, your study of the Vedas, and your strict adherence to regulative principles." So whatever Markandeya did, it was for the pleasure of Krishna, or pleasure of Narayana. So his service, his study, his austerities, and following regulative principles was all dedicated for the pleasure of Narayana. "We are perfectly satisfied with your practice of lifelong celibacy. Please choose whatever benediction you desire, since I can grant your wish. May you enjoy all good fortune." So he had a really, lifelong celibacy means really long life he had. We can't even count the years. Purport. Shri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, "The Lord used the plural form in the beginning of this verse, 'We are satisfied,' because he was referring to himself along with Shiva and Uma, who will later be glorified by Markandeya." So we have, that's chapter 10, where Lord Shiva will appear with Uma and also give benedictions to Markandeya. The Lord then used the singular, "I am the bestower of benedictions," because ultimately only Lord Narayana, Krishna, can award the highest perfection of life, eternal Krishna consciousness. The sage said, "O Lord of Lords, all glories to you. O Lord Achyuta, you remove all the stresses for devotees who surrender unto you. That you have allowed me to see you is all the benediction I want." 5. Such demigods as Lord Brahma achieve their exalted position simply by seeing your beautiful lotus feet after their minds have become mature in yoga practice. And now, my Lord, you have personally appeared before me. Purport. Markandeya Rishi points out that exalted demigods like Lord Brahma achieve their position simply by glimpsing the Lord's lotus feet. And yet, Markandeya Rishi was now able to see Lord Krishna's entire body. Thus, he could not even imagine the extent of his good fortune. So the demigods generally only see the feet. Glimpsing, not getting darshan all the time. O lotus-eyed Lord, O crest jewel of renowned personalities, although I am satisfied simply by seeing you, I do wish to see your illusory potency. Here we go. By whose influence the entire world, together with its ruling demigods, considers reality to be materially variegated. Why would he ask such a benediction? Purport. Hasn't he seen it already? A conditioned soul sees the material world to be constituted of independent, separate entities. Actually, all things are united, being potencies of the Supreme Lord. Markandeya Rishi is curious to witness the exact process by which Maya, the Lord's bewildering potency, casts living beings into illusion. Now, Vishwanath comments, I desire to see Jakshe. Sadbidam means various effects arising from the cause, sat, or it can mean the destruction of the existing world. Why would he want to see the destruction? Anyway, none of us will ever ask for such a benediction after we hear this chapter. We will not want a long life like Markandeya Rishi. Verse 7. He says, Tateti sa smayan praga. Tateti, so be it. Sutta Goswami said, O wise Shonaka, thus satisfied by Markandeya's praise and worship, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiling, replied, so be it. And then departed for his hermitage at Bhadrikashrama. So we'll hear in the purport what was in his smile. Why was he smiling? For two reasons. The words Bhagavan and Ishvara in this verse refer to the Supreme Lord in his incarnation as the twin sages Nara and Narayan. According to Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, the Supreme Lord smiled ruefully because he prefers that his pure devotees stay away from his illusory energy. Now, you English second language people, do you understand this word, ruefully? No. It means, you don't, yeah, I thought you wouldn't. It means he's thinking with regret. With regret, yeah, that's right, with regret. He's thinking, he's smiling, oh, well, I wish you hadn't asked that benediction, but because you have, so I'm giving it. So ruefully, with regret, thank you. That was good. Because he prefers his pure devotees stay away from his illusory energy. Curiosity to see the illusory energy of the Lord sometimes develops into sinful material desire. You see it and you want it. Nonetheless, to please his devotee Markandeya, the Lord granted his request, just as a father who cannot convince his son to give up pursuing a harmful desire may let him experience some painful reaction so that he will then voluntarily desist. Thus understanding what would soon happen to Markandeya, the Lord smiled as he prepared to display the illusory potency to him. So the example of a father and the son, Srila Prabhupada with his son, he did that. The son wanted to stick his finger in the moving fan. And so Prabhupada turned off the fan and then he said, okay, stick your finger in. So the fan was just going a little slow. He stuck his finger, oh, and he probably said, okay, do again. Again, put your finger. No. And so that's kind of what's going to happen. Well, not exactly. He really had to suffer, Markandeya. He really suffered a lot. But, of course, there will be something to compensate for his suffering. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, the Lord smiled. Seeing Maya is only a cause of experiencing grief. If you want that, then I will give it, since I must give you a boon. You must realize, I do not like this experience of seeing Maya. Otherwise, your desire to experience it will not go away. Therefore, by experiencing its suffering, you will give it up. So he was thinking like that. It is like a father who orders his son to give up some action performed by a stubborn son, even though the act will cause the son suffering. But for his devotee, in order to have him give up this desire, the Lord would also give him bliss by showing him his baby form within the experience of suffering. Thus the Lord smiled. So there would be something good there. The Lord won't leave him to suffer. He will be there for him. 8:9. Thinking always of his desire to see the Lord's illusory energy, the sage remained in his ashram, meditating constantly upon the Lord within fire, the sun, the moon, water, the earth, air, lightning, and his own heart, and worshipping him with paraphernalia conceived in his mind. But sometimes, overwhelmed by waves of love for the Lord, Markandeya would forget to perform his regular worship. Purport. It is apparent from these verses that Markandeya Rishi was a great devotee of Lord Krishna. Therefore, he wanted to see the illusory energy of the Lord not to fulfill some material ambition, but to learn how his potency is working. Okay. He wants to learn the process, how it's working. Yes. Yeah. Well, maybe he wants to know more how it works. There's always more to learn. If you're, what do you call it? There's jigyasu. Jigyasu or jnani, there's no limit. You spend your whole life figuring out things, and you never find the end.
And there's a lot of time on his hands.
Huh?
And there's a lot of time on his hands.
Yes. Okay. 10. O Brahmana Shonaka. Did we read the purport of 8-9? I don't remember. Okay, so 10. O Brahmana Shonaka, best of the Brigus. One day, while Markandeya was performing his evening worship on the bank of the Pushpabhadra, a great wind suddenly arose. 11. That wind created a terrible sound and brought in its wake fearsome clouds that were accompanied by lightning and roaring thunder, and that poured down on all sides torrents of rain as heavy as wagon wheels. Then the four great oceans appeared on all sides. Just imagine, you're in the middle and all the four oceans are coming, and you're in the middle. What's going to happen to you? Swallowing up the surface of the earth with their wind-tossed waves. And these oceans were terrible sea monsters, fearful whirlpools, and ominous rumblings. The sage saw all the inhabitants of the universe, including himself, tormented within and without by the harsh winds, bolts of lightning, and great waves rising beyond the sky. As the whole earth flooded, he grew perplexed and fearful. Well, I guess everybody didn't die because there was a lot of sea monsters and aquatics living in the water who were very happy. Purport. Here the word Chaturvidham refers to the four sources of birth for conditioned souls, embryos, eggs, seeds, and perspiration. Where do the fish fit into this category?
Eggs?
Okay, thank you. But they were okay. So, if time of devastation, if you're a fish, you'll make it. No, but first there's fire. No, you won't. Okay. 14. Even as Markandeya looked on, the rain pouring down from the clouds filled the ocean more and more until that great sea, its waters violently whipped into terrifying waves by hurricanes, covered up all the earth's islands, mountains, and continents. The water inundated the earth, outer space, heaven, and celestial region. Indeed, the entire expanse of the universe was flooded in all directions, and out of all its inhabitants, only Markandeya remained. His matted hair scattered, the great sage wandered about alone in the water, as if dumb and blind. Tormented by hunger and thirst, attacked by monstrous makaras and timingala fish, and battered by the wind and waves, he moved aimlessly through the infinite darkness into which he had fallen. I guess he understands now what is the illusory energy and how it works. As he grew increasingly exhausted, he lost all sense of direction and could not tell the sky from the earth. He was in the water, but it was like everything was black. And he just was like being beaten, you know, in the dark. Just imagine being in the dark and not seeing anything and being thrown like up and down and around and creatures attacking you. And you're hungry and thirsty and nothing you can do. And you can't die, of course. You have to live through it. Just imagine such an experience. At times he was engulfed by the great whirlpools. So it's not an ordinary whirlpool like in Ganga. This is, you know, real thing. Sometimes he was beaten by the mighty waves. And at other times, the aquatic monsters threatened to devour him as they attacked one another. Sometimes he felt lamentation, bewilderment, misery, happiness, or fear. And at other times, he experienced such terrible illness and pain, he felt himself dying. So he even got sick. But he, no doctor, nothing can help him. He just have to suffer. And you can't die. Just suffer. Countless millions of years passed as Markandeya wandered about in that deluge, his mind bewildered by the illusory energy of Lord Vishnu's Supreme Personality of Godhead. So not 1 year, millions of years. Once, while wandering in the water, the Brahmana, Markandeya, discovered a small island upon which stood a young banyan tree bearing blossoms and fruits. Upon a branch of the northeast portion of that tree, he saw an infant boy lying within a leaf. The child's effulgence was swallowing up the darkness. The infant's dark blue complexion was the color of a flawless emerald. His lotus face shone with a wealth of beauty. And his throat bore marks like the lines on a conch shell. He had a broad chest, a finely shaped nose, beautiful eyebrows, and lovely ears that resembled pomegranate flowers, and they had inner folds like a conch shell's spirals. The corners of his eyes were reddish like the whorl of a lotus, and the effulgence of his coral-like lips slightly reddened a nectarian enchanting smile on his face. So yes, if you've seen pomegranate flowers, I've seen, they're reddish, they're red also. So imagine pomegranate flowers with conch shell whorls in them, and then you'll see Krishna's ears. You'll be able to see. As he breathed, his splendid hair trembled, and his deep navel became distorted by the moving folds of skin on his abdomen, which resembled a banyan leaf. The exalted Brahmana watched with amazement as the infant took hold of one of his lotus feet with his graceful fingers, placed a toe within his mouth, and began to suck. Purport. The young child was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Lord Krishna wondered, "So many devotees are hankering for the nectar of my lotus feet. Therefore, let me personally experience that nectar." Thus the Lord, playing like an ordinary baby, began to suck on his toes. So it's good to be a devotee. We can get the nectar of Krishna's lotus feet, so we should go for it. 26. As Markandeya beheld the child, all his weariness vanished. Indeed, so great was his pleasure that the lotus of his heart, along with the lotus, his lotus eyes, fully blossomed, and the hairs on his body stood on end. Confused as to the identity of the wonderful infant, the sage approached him. Purport. Markandeya wanted to ask the child about his identity and therefore approached him. Just then, the child inhaled, drawing Markandeya within his body like a mosquito. There, the sage found the entire universe arrayed as it had been before its dissolution. Seeing this, Markandeya was most astonished and perplexed. The sage saw the entire universe, the sky, heavens, and earth, the stars, mountains, oceans, great islands, and continents, the expanses in every direction, saintly and demoniac living beings, forests, countries, rivers, cities, and mines, agricultural villages and cow pastures, and the occupational and spiritual activities of the various social divisions. He also saw the basic elements of creation along with all their byproducts as well as time itself, which regulates the progression of countless ages within the days of Brahma. In addition, he saw everything else created for use in material life. All this he saw manifested before him as if it were real. So now I'd like to read a little from Mahabharata again, in the first part again. And Yudhisthira is talking to Markandeya, and he was reflecting on what Markandeya told him about don't worry. Then he asked, "O learned sage, in this world our lives are dedicated to the Brahmins. If it pleases you, kindly tell us about a Brahmin's greatness a brahmana's greatness and glories. So then, in response, the rishi recounted numerous ancient histories. His audience was wrapped in wonder. He also described the creation of the universe, which he had personally witnessed, and the nature of the destruction that occurs at the end of Brahma's day, a period of millions of years. He described how he had floated on the causal water out of which creation occurs as it rose and covered the lower and middle planets. At the end of that inundation, he had seen a wonderful child lying on a banyan leaf. So here Markandeya is speaking. I was struck with amazement. I could not understand how a child could have survived when the entire universe was destroyed. The boy was effulgent, and his face was as beautiful as the moon. His eyes resembled full-blown lotuses, and his body was a blackish color. He lay there smiling and sucking his toe. Then on his chest I saw the mark of Shrivatsa, and I thought that it must be Vishnu, although I could not be sure. As I approached him, he said, "My child, I know you are eager to rest. O Markandeya, enter my body and rest a while. I am pleased with you." When the boy addressed me, I lost all sense of my identity and forgot my material designations. He opened his mouth, and I felt myself drawn into it. Suddenly entering his stomach, I beheld the whole earth with all its cities and kingdoms. I wandered about for some time, seeing all the familiar sights, including Ganga and her tributaries, the Himalayas, the forest in which I had performed asceticism. I saw the race of celestials headed by Indra, as well as the races of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Although I wandered about within that boy's body for a long time, I never did find its limit. Confused, I began to worship the Supreme Lord with my thoughts and words. Suddenly, I found myself emerging again, and once more I saw him lying on the banyan leaf. I worshipped that immeasurably powerful being who had swallowed up the entire universe, and I placed my head at his feet. I asked him who he was and about his purpose. Why was he lying there with the universe held in his body? The child spoke in such a way that my material illusions were completely dispelled. He told me that he was the original Supreme Person from whom everything emanates and into whom it enters at its end. I was amazed to hear him speak of his own glories. He is known as Vishnu, Narayan, and Hari, but he possesses innumerable other names. That all-knowing personality then told me that I should remain within his body until Brahma again awoke and recreated the universe.
Who's commented?
This is from Mahabharata. It's on folio, I think. It's from folio. He disappeared from my sight, and I found myself back within the varied creation I had seen within him. Finishing his narration, Markandeya looked across at Krishna. So Krishna was there with the Pandavas when he was speaking. "King Yudhisthira, that lotus-eyed boy whom I saw at the end of creation has now appeared as Krishna. He has become your relative and friend. Without doubt, you should know him to be the ancient Supreme Person, inconceivable Hari, original personality of Godhead. He granted me the boon that my memory would never fail and my death would come only when I wanted it. Seeing Krishna sitting here wearing a yellow silken garment, I'm remembering that boy. Do not doubt that it was he whom I saw in the waters of devastation. O hero among men, this entire creation rests within him, even as air rests within ether. Take refuge in Krishna, for there are none superior to him." So that's the end of the Mahabharata sequence. Back to our verses here, back in the stomach again. He saw before him the Himalaya Mountains, Pushpabhadra River, and his own hermitage, where he had had the audience of the sages, Naranarayan. Then, as Markandeya beheld the entire universe, the infant exhaled, expelling the sage from his body and casting him back into the ocean of dissolution. Well, he had some rest for a while, and now again he's going to suffer. In that vast sea, he again saw the banyan tree growing on the tiny island and the infant boy lying within the leaf. The child glanced at him from the corner of his eyes with a smile imbued with the nectar of love, and Markandeya took him into his heart through his eyes. Greatly agitated, the sage ran to embrace the transcendental Personality of Godhead. At that moment, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original master of all mysticism and who is hidden within everyone's heart, became invisible to the sage, just as the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish. Last verse, 33. There is a commentary by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Again thrown into the ocean, he wandered about for millions of years. Not like he just went for a few minutes and saw the banyan leaf. He again had to suffer. Experiencing hardship, then he saw the child on the banyan leaf, or the upraised portion of earth. The Lord glanced at him with a smile of prema, which was like nectar. Again he entered the body of the Lord when he inhaled. It should be understood that he went in and came out seven times. So because he had the desire to live for seven kalpas, so therefore he had to go through, he went inside and then he went out and suffered the destruction seven times. The Lord then became invisible, just as desire for wealth of a poor man comes and goes. So seven times this happened, according to Vishnu Chakravarti. And we will hear that also. He'll repeat that. But it won't be as bad as it seems. Verse 34, after the Lord disappeared, O Brahmana, the banyan tree, the great water, and the dissolution of the universe all vanished as well. And in an instant, Markandeya found himself back in his own hermitage, just as before. So Vishwanath comments, within one instant of time, seven kalpas of time had been contracted by the inconceivable energy of the Lord. So he didn't really suffer millions of years, although it seemed like millions of years. It was a kalpa, but it wasn't a kalpa, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Seven kalpas, 7 days of Brahma and nights. Now I have another thing here from Navadvip Mahatmya. And it tells a story in another way. This is by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, I believe, yes? Navadvip Mahatmya. And it describes that the island is in Mayapur, Godrumdweep. The island called Godrumdweep, Surabhi stays here eternally. Surabhi remains here beside a banyan tree, constantly serving the lotus feet of Gauranga. Therefore, this place is called Godruma. Go means cow, and Druma is tree. So there's a cow and a tree. At this place, the devotee's desires are fulfilled. One who builds a cottage and worships here will easily become absorbed in Sri Chaitanya's lotus feet. Markandeya once lived on this island during the flood of devastation. The Muni was awarded a lifetime of seven kalpas. Seeing the great danger during devastation as everything became inundated with water, he began looking for a place to stay. Tossed in the waves, he went here and there. Oh, why did I take such a benediction? He lamented. The Dham of Navadvip remained, however, giving shelter to the devotees. Submerged by a wave, the Muni became unconscious and sank. But merciful Surabhi happened to see him and carefully lifted him out. When the son of Mrikunda regained consciousness, he saw the island of Godrum, an astounding place extending for a billion kroshas. Big. He saw beautiful streams and rivers, beautiful trees and vines, and birds that sang the glories of Gauranga. He saw a banyan tree extending over an area of 8 miles, and under the tree he saw Surabhi. The Muni was extremely distressed due to hunger, so he begged Surabhi, O goddess, please protect my life. Kindly rescue me by giving me your milk. Surabhi then mercifully gave her milk to the Muni. The Muni thus regained his strength and said to Surabhi, O goddess, my mother, you pervade the universe by your mystic potency. Without understanding the consequences, I took a boon to live for seven kalpas. But at the time of devastation, I suffered greatly from various miseries. There is no happiness at all. What am I to do, mother? Please tell me how to get free from this misery. Surabhi then instructed the Muni, worship the two lotus feet of Gauranga. This Navadvip is beyond material nature, therefore never destroyed. By material vision, this place is 16 kroshas, but it is the supreme Vaikuntha, therefore without fault or illusion. Place and time here have nothing to do with material existence, nor is anyone here affected by material illusion. Just see the unprecedented wonders of Namadvipa, surrounded on all sides by the chaste Viraja River. Each part measures a billion kroshas, and in the center is Mayapur, a vast city. So unlimitedly huge. The eight islands are like petals of a lotus, with Antardvipa as the central stamen. All the Tirthas, Devas, and Rishis reside here, worshipping Gauranga. For your own good, dear Markandeya, take shelter of Gauranga's feet. Take shelter of unmotivated dharma by keeping far away from desire for bhukti and mukti. By taking shelter in the worship of Gauranga, you will attain the sweet fruit of love of God. When that prema sits in your heart, it will drown you in the nectar of the pastimes of the Lord. You will get the shelter of Radha's lotus feet in Braj, and your mind will be fixed in the service of the divine couple. The happiness of this service is unmatched, while in the non-differentiated Brahman there is only illusory knowledge. Vimuni, hearing the words of Surabhi, folded his hands and said, "If I worship Gauranga, what will be my destiny?" Surabhi answered with the essence of Siddhanta, "In worshipping Gauranga, there's no consideration. When you call out the name of Gaura, your sinful reactions are destroyed and you are freed from all distress as your material life is vanquished. Besides sinful reactions, even the fruits of mental speculation, which are only trouble, will be cut out at the root. Therefore, you should stay on this island and submerge yourself in Gauranga Ras while worshipping the Lord." Hearing this, Markandeya became filled with bliss. As he chanted the name of Gaura, he sometimes laughed and sometimes cried. Look at this remarkable place where Markandeya received life. So here we have another version from Navadvipa Mahatmya. At one point he worshipped Gauranga at Godruma on this island. So does anybody have any questions on this chapter?
What happened after that?
Then he went back to his ashram, as we heard here.
So that was just before going back to Gauranga?
Yeah, he was on the island, and then from what I understand, he went to the island and then he went back when everything was just, all the illusion was taken away, and he went back to his own ashram. Oh, he might be there now, who knows? But we won't be able to see him. Yes?
How far extension would this possible? According to the body, the duration of life is the same. Like for an animal, 100 years is just maybe a day or something.
Right.
For Bernard, is 100 years, although it's, 200 years
of
hours. That's true. And so Markandeya, if he must have been, experiencing it like we do, this lifetime, to some degree,
otherwise it would have been too much for him. Yeah, right. Yes, that's a fact. There's a different concept of time, and he's born from the original Prajapatis. So he probably had that conception of time, a different conception of time than we do. Like, it was probably the middle of his day after six manus that he meditated. Oh, it's lunchtime. He just meditated for a few hours there in his time. It could well be. Unless he did it on this earth. Depends where his ashram is. If he was on this earth, then he would be in earth time. But if his ashram is in the higher planets, then it will be in... Yeah, that's a different question. Yeah, that was, yeah, the Kalpas is 7 days of Brahma.
What seems to be.
Yeah, yeah, 7 days of Brahma. Yeah. If he's a resident of Brahmaloka, it wouldn't have been a long time, but if he was in a different planet, then it would appear a longer time, all the Kalpas and everything.
Well, it would appear that his experience of it seemed to be that long, but it only took
minutes. Yeah. Markandeya's, if anybody know where is Markandeya's ashram? Is it here on this earth? If it's here, then that means, well, it could be up in Shambhala. In the Himalayas. Pushpabhadra River. That may be, but different from our time. That may be like the heavenly earth. where people live for 10,000 years, but even that, that still makes it quite a long time for him. If the lifespan's 10,000 years, but he had a much higher lifespan. It was in the Himalayas. Okay. So we know in the Himalayas there are rishis who are living, there are people still living for thousands and millions of years. Well, it sounded to me like he had some jnana contamination here, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. He had some jnana there, a lot of jnana. Jnana Mishra. Whoops. Yeah, if I could find this, let's see. Okay. One of these last comments by Vishnu Chakravarti. Yeah, I can't seem to find it now. But there was one comment about the non-differentiated Brahman. Yeah. Maybe it's in a purport. No, I can't seem to find it. Remember reading a comment about non-differentiated Brahman, which seems to indicate that he had some interest in that as well. But he was a devotee. He was doing sadhana and... Yeah. Any other questions? Yes.
In ancient stories, when it was submerged in water, it was sometimes the man bewildered.
Yeah.
And happy.
Yeah, happy. How is he was happy, you know, when the creatures didn't bite him. And when he wasn't being beaten by the waves and going down in the whirlpools, then maybe he was happy. That's what is happiness in this world? It's when you're not sick, when you're not having problems. That's happiness. So when the big waves weren't throwing him around, when he wasn't falling into the whirlpools, when the big creatures weren't attacking him, then he was happy. And when he wasn't feeling any pain or illness in the devastation, then he was happy. Yeah. That's material happiness, right? Yeah. Yeah, well, he wanted it. He wanted to be covered, so he got covered. And he got to experience all the sufferings of the people. And then he got to experience the happiness of the people in the material world. So this is the happiness of the people when the waves are not throwing them around, when they're not falling in the whirlpool, when monsters are not attacking them, people are not attacking, then they're happy. So he was experiencing, because he didn't experience that suffering before. He didn't have experience of the material world. So he got it. And we also didn't, and we got it. And hopefully we're convinced not to ask that question again and not to come back here and look for happiness and look for anything, comfort, yeah?
In text 33,
yeah.
And then he says, Krishna disappeared. He became invisible to the sage just as the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish. I wonder if you would care to comment.
Just as the achievements, yeah. Actually, Vishnath comments on that. He has a sentence on that, which I read. So, comment on the achievements of an incompetent person can suddenly vanish. So, he said, the Lord became invisible just as desire for wealth of a poor man comes and goes. So, a poor man may think, oh, yes, I want to have so much money. And he thinks, and by this way I'll get money. But then, because he's not competent to get money, then it just goes away. Just he may have the desire for it, but then it goes. So the Lord, we may desire to see him, but because we're not competent to see him, we don't have the adhikar. So the poor man does not have the adhikar to have wealth. So we don't have the adhikar to see the Lord. So he becomes, he's invisible for us, just as wealth suddenly vanishes. I mean, it's like a mirage, actually, their idea of wealth. From the comment of Vishnu, then I can understand more what it means. Any other questions on chapter 9? Okay, we're going to move on to chapter 10 because we still have time. And chapter 10, verses 1 to 42, Lord Shiva and Uma glorify Markandeya Rishi. Suta Goswami said, Supreme Lord Narayan had arranged this opulent display of his bewildering potency. Markandeya Rishi, having experienced it, took shelter of the Lord. Sri Markandeya said, O Lord Hari, I take shelter of the soles of your lotus feet, which bestow fearlessness upon all who surrender to them. Even the great demigods are bewildered by your illusory energy, which appears to them in the guise of knowledge. Purport. Conditioned souls are attracted to material sense gratification, and thus they meticulously study the workings of nature. Although they appear to be advancing in scientific knowledge, they become increasingly entangled in their false identification with the material body, and therefore increasingly merge into ignorance. So this fearlessness, yes, this you were telling me, which chapter was that? You get fearlessness, three things, go back to Godhead, fearlessness, mode of goodness, yeah, mode of pure goodness. So fearlessness, the lotus feet of Krishna give fearlessness. So now Markandeya is taking shelter of those lotus feet. Arjuna also, when Krishna was here, he offered the same kind of prayer because he said to Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead, no limit to your energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material misery can find the path of liberation in you only. So I just like to speak a little bit about this fearlessness again. Prabhupada talks about it in one purport of 1.12.28. These are predictions about Parikshit Maharaj from his horoscope. And this is a prediction of Parikshit. After inquiring about proper self-knowledge from the son of Vyasadeva, who will be a great philosopher, he will renounce all material attachment and achieve a life of fearlessness. So Prabhupada talks about here in this world, everybody is always fearful, including us. And this fearfulness is called anxiety. Everyone is full of anxiety, either by breaking or without breaking the laws of nature. You don't have to break the rules to be in anxiety. You can be in anxiety anyway. So then one very wonderful statement, Prabhupada says, liberation, after the statement, means getting relief from these constant anxieties. This is possible only when the anxiety is changed to devotional service of the Lord. So anxiety will still remain, but it will be changed. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the chance to change the quality of anxiety from matter to spirit. So anxiety will still be there, but it will be for Krishna. And Yudhisthira also, he was fearless when he left home. And the universal form is described. His lotus feet are protection from all kinds of fear. This is 2.6.7, second canto.
A question about anxiety. Yes, it's Prabhupada. The devotee is asking, is about spiritual material anxiety. It says, when one is anxious about finishing his rounds,
yeah,
and doing so many things to keep himself spiritually healthy, is that spiritual anxiety?
Uh-huh.
He says, spiritual anxiety is when we're just anxious about pleasing Krishna.
anxious about pleasing Krishna, that's spiritual anxiety. Not to finish something. Not that I must finish this, finish that, and it's done. Anxious to finish. Anxious to please should be what we are anxious to do.
Not even, they were saying anxious for my own spiritual well-being.
Oh, not even anxious for my own spiritual well-being. Okay, I see. Take it in that way. Not, we should not be in anxiety, yeah, for our own spiritual. Who, the example is in Braj, of course. How the inhabitants there, their anxiety is only for Krishna. Mother Yashoda, her anxiety, the monkeys will get hurt, my son, or his feet will be injured, the gopis, his feet will be injured when he walks in the forest. They were all in anxiety for Krishna. That was their only thought. How Krishna will suffer. How can prevent any drop of perspiration from Krishna coming out. So if we can help, if we can do that, then our life is perfect. So their anxiety was for Krishna, not for themselves to be pleased by Krishna, but for Krishna to be pleased by them. In other words, Krishna is the enjoyer and we are the enjoyed. So our aim is to be enjoyed by Krishna. So he will be happy, pleased by what we do. Yeah, that is anxiety. Yes, purification. Mode of goodness is described in Bhagavad Gita. The yogi, he acts body, mind, and words only for the purpose of purification. That is mode of goodness. That's right. So the other one, beyond that, is you may be purified or not purified, but if Krishna is happy, then that's all that counts. If your spiritual master is happy, you don't worry. If what you're doing is pure, you don't consider. Of course, if you're not on that level, you should consider what you're doing, if it's pure or impure. That's what we learned from Uddhava Gita. If you're on that lower level, you do have to follow the rules and regulations very completely. But if you're on that spontaneous level, then automatically you'll follow the rules very nicely. And there won't be any discrepancy. Okay. Yes. Verse 3. Suta Goswami said, Lord Rudra, traveling in the sky on his bull and accompanied by his consort Rudrani, as well as his personal associates, observed Markandeya in trance. Goddess Uma, seeing the sage, addressed Lord Girisha, My lord, just see this learned brahmana, his body, mind, and senses motionless in trance. 5. He is as calm as the waters of the ocean when the wind has ceased and the fish remain still. Therefore, my lord, since you bestow perfection on the performers of austerity, please award this sage the perfection that is obviously due him. So she's being very merciful and she wants to give him a benediction. She's very impressed with him and she's telling her husband, please give him a benediction.
And he's just finished going through.
Yeah, just went through all of that. I know, and now he's as calm as an ocean. 6. Lord Shiva replied, surely this saintly brahmana does not desire any benediction, not even liberation itself, for he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. So he doesn't need it. He doesn't need our benediction, he's telling his wife. Purport. The words naive chat yashisha kvapi indicate. Markandeya Rishi was uninterested in any reward available on any planet within the universe, nor did he want liberation. For he had achieved the Supreme Lord himself. Vishnu, he does not want cities like Anima. Then she says, well, give him liberation. Then Shiva says, he does not want that either. Then she says, then give him bhakti. And then Lord Shiva says, he's already attained bhakti. So what can I give him? 7. Still, my dear Bhavani, let us talk with this saintly personality. After all, association with saintly devotees is man's highest achievement. So they're going to him not to give, but to get his association now. Lord Shiva and Parvati, they want to get the association of Markandeya Rishi. He has everything. He doesn't want anything. He's got bhakti, so we can't give him anything, but we can get something. We can get his association. So in this mood, they're approaching Markandeya. Suta Goswami said, having spoken thus, Lord Shankara, shelter of pure souls, master of all spiritual sciences and controller of all embodied living beings, approached the sage. Vishnu's comment. Shiva is called the shelter of the devotees because he gives bhakti, which they desire. He is not only a shelter of devotees, but of those with material desires. He is the Lord of all types of knowledge. This is not at all astonishing, since he is the Lord of all beings, Ishvara. Verse 9. Because Markandeya's material mind had stopped functioning, the sage failed to notice that Lord Shiva and his wife, the controllers of the universe, had personally come to see him. Markandeya was so absorbed in meditation that he was unaware of either himself or the external world. So he's back in his ashram, obviously, after the devastation experience. He's back in his ashram, back to meditating as before, completely aloof from the world. Vishnu Chakravarti says, not only was Markandeya unaware of Shiva, but he was unaware of himself in the sense of his identity as I, and was unaware of the universe, identified as mine. Yes, I had that experience under anesthesia. I was just existing. I was awake. I mean, awake, but no self, no identity, no universe, just everything black. So I can identify with his thing, except I didn't get any night. Well, yeah, I got darshan of the holy name. Verse 10. Understanding the situation very well, the powerful Lord Shiva employed his mystic power to enter within the sky of Markandeya's heart, just as the wind passes through an opening. 11:13. Shri Markandeya saw Lord Shiva suddenly appear within his heart. Lord Shiva's golden hair resembled lightning. He had 3 eyes, 10 arms, and a tall body that shone like the rising sun. He wore a tiger skin, and he carried a trident, a bow, arrows, a sword, and a shield, along with prayer beads, a damodari drum, a skull, and an axe. So, different hands for different purposes. One hand had japa, one hand for dancing with his drum. The skull, I don't know what he would do with that. And we know what he does with his weapons, he fights. Astonished, the sage came out of his trance and thought, who is this and where has he come from? Opening his eyes, the sage saw Lord Rudra, the spiritual master of the 3 worlds, together with Uma and Rudra's followers. Markandeya then offered his respectful obeisances by bowing his head. Purport. When Markandeya Rishi saw Lord Shiva and Uma within his heart, he immediately became aware of them and thus also of his own individual self. Yes. During his trance, on the other hand, he had simply been absorbed in awareness of the Supreme Lord and had thus forgotten himself as the conscious perceiver. 15. Markandeya worshipped Lord Shiva along with Uma and Shiva's associates by offering them words of welcome, sitting places, water for washing their feet, scented drinking water, fragrant oils, flower garlands, and arti lamps. Wow. He was prepared. I guess he could just manifest whatever he wanted anyway. But that flowers were there, I'm sure. 16. Markandeya said, O my almighty Lord, what can I possibly do for you who are fully satisfied by your own ecstasy? Indeed, by your mercy, you satisfy this entire world. 17. Again and again I offer my obeisances unto you, all auspicious transcendental personality. As a Lord of goodness, you give pleasure. In contact with the mode of passion, you appear most fearful. And you also associate with the mode of ignorance. So he's on all levels, Lord Shiva. 18. Sutta Goswami said, Lord Shiva, the foremost demigod and shelter of the saintly devotees, was satisfied by Markandeya's praise. Pleased, he smiled and addressed the sage. 19. Lord Shiva said, please ask for me some benediction, since among all givers of benedictions, we 3, Brahma, Vishnu, and I, are the best. Seeing us never goes in vain, because simply by seeing us, a mortal achieves immortality. Yes, because he's the greatest devotee. You just see a great devotee, then you will also become immortal. Amrita. That was in today's Bhagavatam class. The devotees are traveling just to make people immortal in this world. They travel and preach. 2021, the inhabitants and ruling demigods of all planets, along with Lord Brahma, the Supreme Lord Hari, and I, glorify and worship and assist those brahmanas who are saintly, always peaceful, free of material attachment, compassionate to all living beings, purely devoted to us, devoid of hatred, and endowed with equal vision. So, I have a quote from Third Canto, 16th chapter, verse 7, where the Lord says, "Because I'm the servant of my devotees, my lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin. And I've acquired such a disposition, the goddess of fortune does not leave me." So he's giving credit to his devotees. Of course, this is Lord Shiva, who's speaking here, but still, we know our Lord is Lord Krishna. And he is the one who is giving all the power to everyone in this world. So, Lord Shiva is also mentioned in these verses from Third Canto. He says, the Lord says, "I am the master of my unobstructed internal energy, and the water of the Ganga is the remnant left after my feet are washed. That water sanctifies the three worlds along with Lord Shiva, who bears it on his head. If I can take the dust of the feet of the Vaishnava on my head, who will refuse to do the same?" So now Lord Shiva is there, and he's also glorifying Markandeya. He's talking about the devotees, the brahmanas. These devotees do not differentiate between Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and me, nor do they differentiate between themselves and other living beings. Therefore, because you are this kind of saintly devotee, we worship you. So Markandeya worship Lord Shiva and Parvati. Parvati and Lord Shiva are worshipping Markandeya now. Purport. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva are manifestations of creating and annihilating potencies of the personality of Godhead Vishnu. Thus unity exists among these three ruling deities of the material world. One should not, on the basis of the modes of nature, find material duality within the ruling potency of the Supreme Lord, although that potency is manifested in three divisions as Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. So we don't want to. We understand that they are three, but they are also one because they are coming from Vishnu himself. That's the purport I just read of verse 22. I just read the purport of verse 22. Now we're in verse 23. Mere bodies of water do not constitute holy places, nor are lifeless statues of the demigods actual worshipable deities. Because external vision fails to appreciate the higher essence of the holy rivers and the demigods, these purify only after a considerable time. But devotees like you purify immediately just by being seen. So remember, there is one verse. First Canto, there's a verse. And then there was one from 10th Canto, I was remembering, Yasyatma Bhuti, Kunape Chitatuke, about the holy place of water, going to take a bath. Yes. So that verse from First Canto, I'll sing that verse. It's 1:15. Yat para sangshaya sutta munayapa shamayanaha satya punantipaspishta swadhunyapa nisevaya. O Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the waters of the Ganga can sanctify only after prolonged use. So, in that purport, Prabhupada gives us one very important sentence. And it's about the lotus feet of the Lord. It says, to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord means to take shelter of the pure devotees. So you always hear about take shelter of the lotus feet, go to the lotus feet. So what does that mean then? It means the devotees. That is the lotus feet of the Lord. So if you want to take shelter of the lotus feet, then you take shelter of the devotees. Can't avoid the devotees. 1.1.15. That was from the purport. Verse 24. By meditating upon the Supreme Soul, performing austerities, engaging in Vedic study, but following regular principles, the Brahmanas sustain within themselves the three Vedas, which are none different from Lord Vishnu, Brahma, Lord Brahma, and me. Therefore, I offer my obeisances unto the Brahmanas. So what do the Brahmanas do to keep the Vedas inside? Meditate on the Lord, perform austerities, study the Vedas, and follow regular principles. These four things. Because of that, then they're like walking Vedas. The Vedas are in their heart. Purport, a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord is considered the most elevated of Brahmanas, since all spiritual endeavor culminates in loving service of the Lord. 25. Even the worst sinners and social outcasts are purified just by hearing about or seeing personalities like you. Imagine then how purified they become by directly speaking with you. 26. Sutta Goswami said, drinking with his ears Lord Shiva's nectarian words, full of the confidential essence of religion, Markandeya Rishi could not be satiated. Purport. Markandeya Rishi was not eager to hear himself praised by Lord Shiva, but he appreciated Lord Shiva's deep realization of religious principles and therefore desired to hear more. See, he wasn't thinking when Lord Shiva was saying, oh, the Brahmanas are this and that, he wasn't thinking, oh, that means me you're talking about. He was thinking, yes, the Brahmanas are this, but I am not the Brahmana. That's so he was hearing all this praise, but he was thinking, yes, what you say is true, but it doesn't refer to me, actually. So that's why he wanted to hear more, because he didn't take it personally. He didn't take the praise or the fame and infamy. So he's not talking about me, obviously. Vishnu's comments. Dharma mentioned here is pure bhakti, mentioned in verse 20, and not seeing the difference between the self and others, mentioned in verse 22. So dharma is bhakti for us. Dharma may mean different things for different people, but actually, in the case of Markandeya, dharma is bhakti. Sarvadharma Parityaja. Guya was, we worship you, in verse 22. Words full of bhakti and the intimate relation of the Lord with his devotee could not satisfy him completely. He was not experiencing bliss from being praised, but in the guise of being praised, getting instructions, telling him what type of person he should be. So that's what Markandeya was thinking. Yes, I should be like these Brahmanas who don't differentiate, who see everybody equally, who worship the Lord. I should be like that. He wasn't thinking, oh yeah, funny, you understand me perfectly. No, he wasn't thinking, yes, you're right, I never thought of that, but really, that's true, it's about me. No, he was thinking, yeah, I should be like that, like those Brahmanas. So he's a real Brahmin. 27. Markandeya, having been forced by Lord Vishnu's illusory energy to wander about for a long time in the water of dissolution, had become extremely exhausted. So it was millions of years after all. We're not sure how long it was. Might have been condensed for Lord Vishnu's 1 second or something, but not for Markandeya's, obviously. He did suffer for millions of years. But Lord Shiva's words of nectar vanquished his accumulated suffering, thus he addressed Lord Shiva. Purport. Markandeya Rishi had desired to see Lord Vishnu's illusory energy and had suffered extensive miseries. But now in the person of Shiva, Lord Vishnu again appeared before the sage and relieved all his suffering by imparting blissful spiritual instructions. So how to get free from suffering? Just go hear blissful spiritual instructions. If you're suffering. 28. Sri Markandeya said, it is indeed most difficult for embodied souls to understand the pastimes of the universal controllers, for such lords bow down to and offer praise to the very living beings they rule. Purport. In the material world, conditioned souls try to lord it over one another. Therefore, they cannot understand the pastimes of the actual lords of the universe. Such bona fide lords have a wonderfully magnanimous mentality and thus sometimes bow down to the most qualified and saintly among their own subjects. So imagine Lord Shiva is worshipping Markandeya. 29. Generally, it is to induce embodied souls to accept religious principles that the authorized teachers of religion exhibit ideal behavior while encouraging and praising the proper behavior of others. So Lord Krishna in Dwarka, he also washed the lotus feet of Sudama, Brahmana, and took the water on his head. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was cleaning the Gundija temple, he was praising all of those who were cleaning the best and chastising those who weren't doing a good job. And he was also doing it himself. So by example and praising proper behavior, then the acharyas teach. And the Lord teaches too. It's not like Lord Chaitanya said, okay, I'm going to be the temple commander and you all are going to do the cleaning and I'll just supervise and watch all of you work hard. No, he did the most of everyone. When they collected all the piles, his pile was the biggest. His pile was the biggest pile of dirt of everyone. So whoever is the leader, he should have the biggest pile of dirt. And then he is a real leader, true leader in what he's doing. 30. This apparent humility is simply a show of mercy. So Markandeya is talking to Lord Shiva. Such behavior of the Supreme Lord and his personal associates, which the Lord effects by his own bewildering potency, does not spoil his power any more than a magician's powers are diminished by his exhibition of tricks. 31, 32, I offer my obeisances to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has created this entire universe simply by his desire, then entered into it as the super soul. By making the modes of nature act, he seems to be the direct creator of this world, just as a dreamer seems to be acting within his dream. He is the owner and ultimate controller of the three modes of nature, yet he remains alone and pure without any equal. He is the supreme spiritual master of all, the original personal form of the absolute truth. Purport. Supreme Lord releases his material potencies and by their interaction creation takes place. The Lord remains aloof as the supreme transcendental entity. Still, because the entire creation unfolds according to his design and will, his controlling hand is perceived within all things. People thus imagine that God is the direct builder of this world, although he remains aloof, creating through the manipulation of his multifarious potencies. Prabhupada would give the example of the pilot in the big Boeing 747, that actually all the pilot does pretty much is push the button and then the plane flies. He operates the machinery, he just pushes the button, and then the computer flies the airplane, basically, pretty much. He put it on automatic when you're up in the air, and he can walk around. Prabhupada met one pilot who put his airplane on automatic, and the plane was just flying, the computer was flying the plane. And went back and talked to Srila Prabhupada. So, of course, Krishna, of course, the pilot has to do a little bit more than just push the button, but Krishna doesn't even have to push the button. He just has to glance. And that's enough for everybody to get into motion and act. Just by his glance, it's enough. And he keeps glancing also to keep it going. So, purport, we finish that. 33, O all-pervading Lord, since I have received the benediction of seeing you, what other benediction can I ask for? Simply by seeing you, a person fulfills all his desires and can achieve anything imaginable. Well, that's what he said to Narayan also. Then he asked for something, and he's going to do the same thing again here. 34, but I do request one benediction from you, who are full of all perfection and able to shower down the fulfillment of all desires. I ask to have unfailing devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for his dedicated devotees, especially you. So better desire this time than last time. Just give me pure devotional service. So we should imitate this one. Purport. The words tatparishtatatai clearly indicate Lord Shiva is a devotee of the Supreme Lord, not the Supreme Lord himself. Because a representative of God is offered the same protocol as God himself, Markandeya Rishi addressed Lord Shiva as Lord in previous verses. But now it is clearly revealed that, as stated throughout the Vedic literature, Lord Shiva is an eternal servant of God and not God himself. Desire manifests itself within the mind and heart according to the subtle laws governing consciousness. Pure desire to engage in loving service of the Lord brings one to the most exalted platform of consciousness, and such a perfect understanding of life is available only by the special mercy of the Lord's devotees. Verse 35. Suta Goswami said, thus worshipped and glorified by the eloquent statements of the sage Markandeya, Lord Sharva, Shiva, encouraged by his consort, replied to him as follows. O great sage, because you are devoted to Lord Adhoksaja, all your desires will be fulfilled. Until the very end of this creation cycle, you will enjoy pious fame and freedom from old age and death. Now, how long is that going to be? That is, Vishwanath comments, to the end of the day of Brahma. So he's not going to have to go through that again. Just until this day is over, and then he can go back to Godhead. That's so long life, old age and death, no old age, for one day of Brahma. 37. O Brahmana, may you have perfect knowledge of past, present, and future, along with transcendental realization of the Supreme enriched by renunciation. You have the brilliance of an ideal Brahmana, thus you may achieve the post of a spiritual master of the Puranas. So he's giving him some service as well. First he's empowering him with knowledge, past, present, future, realization. He gave him Gyan, Vigyan, and Vairagya. Three things, Jnana, Vijnana, Vairagya, and then he's giving him a service, Purana Acharya. He's going to be Acharya of the Puranas. So many benedictions Lord Shiva is giving. Suta Goswami said, having thus granted Markandeya Rishi benedictions, Lord Shiva went on his way, continuing to describe to Goddess Devi the accomplishments of the sage and the direct exhibition of the Lord's illusory power that he had experienced. Markandeya Rishi, the best of the descendants of Bhrigu, is glorious because of his achievement of perfection in mystic yoga. Even today, he travels about this world fully absorbed in unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may be visiting our temple, for all we know. One of those sages who come for kirtan. Even today he's wondering. I have thus narrated to you the activities of the highly intelligent sage Markandeya, especially how he experienced the amazing power of the Supreme Lord's illusory energy. Although this event was unique and unprecedented, some unintelligent persons compare it to the cycle of illusory material existence the Supreme Lord has created for the conditioned souls, an endless cycle that has been continuing since time immemorial. Purport. So, some people say it's an allegory, so don't believe these people, is what Suta Goswami is saying here. Don't believe them. And the purport. Markandeya is being drawn into the Lord's body by his inhalation and expelled again by his exhalation should not be considered a symbolic description of the perennial cycles of material creation and annihilation. This portion of Srimad Bhagavatam describes a real historical event experienced by a great devotee of the Lord, and those trying to relegate this story to mere symbolic allegory are here declared to be unintelligent fools. 42. Here is what you get for hearing, and I hope you are all hearing attentively. Oh, I should have read this before I started this chapter. O best of the Bhrigus, this account concerning Markandeya Rishi conveys the transcendental potency of the Supreme Lord. Anyone who properly narrates or hears it will never again undergo material existence, Haribo, which is based on the desire to perform fruitive activities. May you never take birth again. So we heard about his seven.
What about other desires?
Yes. What about other desires? Well, this is what you get from this. You have to hear other stories to get other things. You heard Uddhava Gita. I mean, you get a lot from that. Whatever you want, Uddhava Gita will give you. If you're not satisfied here, you go to Uddhava Gita. And that doesn't matter what you want, you'll get it from Uddhava Gita. You'll go back and hear that again. Okay, so anybody have questions or comments on chapter 10? Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. Yes.
I just have one thought.
Yeah.
You were talking earlier about he knew everything.
Who?
Trikalaya.
Yeah, that came after. Yeah.
So that's how he knew everything, even though he was in meditation and unaware of it.
Right. Yeah, he got that benediction that he would know everything. Mm. Could be. Yeah. Any other questions or comments on chapter 10, Parvati?
Back in chapter 10, the purport of verse 14.
Okay.
The last part. He had become aware of Lord Shiva and Uma in his heart, and he was also aware of his own individual self.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says, during his trance, on the other hand, he had simply been absorbed in awareness of the Lord, the Supreme Lord, and had thus forgotten himself.
Yeah, conscious perceiver, yeah.
I don't understand that.
Yeah, well, I guess you have to experience it. How can you be perceiving the Lord and not be aware that you're perceiving the Lord? Just the only way to understand it is that Krishna is there, and that's all you know is just Krishna, and you forget who you are. Yeah. No, it's different. That's not the same thing. We are perceiving. We're thinking we're the perceiver in our dream. Well, yeah, but when you're not thinking, then you're not conscious usually. When you're not the perceiver.
Now
that's different. That's different, yeah. It's different from forgetting who you are. It's like forgetting you're the conscious perceiver means he's forgot his identity. Separate. Separate identity. Huh?
All there is is
the Lord.
What about your identity?
Yeah. So obviously it doesn't sound... For me it's not a level...
It's a strange sentence.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's a strange sentence. Yeah, it sounds very impersonal.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're in seva, then you'll never forget that you're the conscious. So it sounds like he was just in meditation, but not in seva. Because if you're in seva, if you're meditating on serving, then you don't forget that you're the separate. But here it sounds like he's not separate, yeah?
The gopis forgot.
Oh, okay. There you go. Yeah, very nice. The gopis forgot. When they were in the highest level of trance, then they thought they were Krishna. They forgot their own identities. Very good. In madness.
That's real oneness.
Yeah.
Real.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's an example. Okay, now we can understand how you forget what you're the perceiver. Because they were in trance on Krishna for sure, and that's the highest level of unmad trance, that I am Krishna.
They may not even think, some of these may not even think, I am Krishna. They just think Krishna.
Yeah, I know.
Remember.
The gopis were thinking, I am Krishna. But, they may not think. They just think Krishna. And it's so overwhelming that you forget everything else. Yeah.
When Radha and Krishna is absorbed in each other's consciousness, he takes her complexion, takes his.
Yeah.
Complexion, and they forget who they are, actually.
Yeah.
This is real oneness.
Yeah. That's an experience for a very advanced devotee. Yeah, very good. You remembered Ras Lila. In Ras Lila, the gopis achieved that level of trance. Three levels of trance they had. First, they were conscious and they were asking the trees, where is Krishna? And then the second level, they started to imitate the pastimes. And the third level was, I am Krishna. That was it. Mad. Gone mad.